Quick update, I'm launching a new course for 2025. It's Foundations of Application Security. It's a two-day bootcamp covering everything you need to become a well-rounded AppSec practitioner. There's both public and private courses available, and the best part about it all is taught by me. So if you're interested, just send me an email, call@galahcyber.com.au, or say hi on LinkedIn if you can have a chat about it.
Hi, I'm Cole Cornford, and this is Secured, the podcast that dives deep into the world of application security. After working as a cybersecurity consultant in Europe for over a decade, Jackie Lestau was struck by how many cybersecurity professionals in Australia are men.
I walked into my first Australia event in the industry, and I was just hit with a sea of men. I was like, whoa, okay. And I don't know if you know what that feeling's like, but you just walk in and go, oh, I don't belong here. I feel really intimidated by this.
This led Jackie to found the Australian Women in Security Network, or AWSN, a not-for-profit with the goal of increasing the number of women in the security industry. Had a great chat with her. We spoke about how businesses can change their approach to hiring to improve diversity, the importance of supporting kids and students of all backgrounds who have an interest in the field, as well as some of her thoughts on the future of our industry. So let's jump right on in. And I'm joined here by Jackie. How are you going?
Yeah, good, thank you.
Cool. Well, so with most guests I bring onto the podcast, the first question I always ask them is, what kind of bird are you and why? And I usually ask that question because I run a company called Galah Cyber, and it's my bird is Galah because they're, you know, bright, colorful, and a bit obnoxious, which is pretty much the opposite of most cybersecurity professionals. And yeah, so what kind of bird are you?
It's a really good question, and I love galahs. That's my favorite bird, actually, which is...
Oh, look, I love it. That's so good. All right. Well, let's talk after this. So
exactly. We'll talk all things galahs later. But after a bit of research, because, you know, it's not something that people ask usually, I guess the bird that I came up with is the regent parakeet.
Hmm.
So it's an Australian bird. So yes, I'm very much Australian. And one of the attributes of it that I really like is that it has to establish trust and loyalty really early, and it needs a lot of freedom to move and explore. And I find that that's very much me. I need to have the ability to be able to explore and look at things, and you know, I have quite a lot of energy, and I need to be doing things all the time. And it's also very social and affectionate. So I think that that's pretty much a really good summary of, I guess, me.
That's a great one. I haven't heard of a regent parakeet. I'll have to look it up in my on my desk somewhere. I've got Birds of Australia, like just a big atlas where people tell me what that's the bird it is, and sometimes they say that they're like some kind of foreign one, and I'm just like, oh god, I'm not prepared for this.
I was trying to look, it's a yellow bird, and I was trying to find one that was purple because my favorite color is purple, but I couldn't find one that matched Australia, my attributes, and purple. So I went for a beautiful yellow one instead.
Yeah, the yellow ones we usually see are the masked lapwings around where we are, but people call them plovers because that's the species of bird that they are. And they're the ones that go and attack people repeatedly because they're, annoying and give you nightmares as a child. So I'm sure that you are aware of those ones, the yellow beak like this.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm not like that. So I won't be choosing that one.
Friendly and needs to explore and try new things out.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And you need to build trust.
And loyalty.
So that's probably a good one. Trust can move us straight into cybersecurity. So maybe tell the audience a bit about how you got into cybersecurity and where you are nowadays.
Yeah, so I got into cybersecurity through a bit of a interesting route. So since I was a young girl, I always really loved and was interested in technology. When I was really little, my parents made me do touch typing every single day. If I didn't, then I was getting grounded. So I became a really fast touch typer. And when it came to the point of asking, okay, what do you want to do when you graduate? What do you want to do when you get to university? I said, well, actually, I can touch type really fast, and I'm interested in computers because I got to be exposed to that at school. I went, okay, well, why don't I get into IT? So I did the Bachelor of Information Systems at Monash, and I really loved that. There was only one subject in the whole course, 3-year course on security. So I really went through that very quickly, but I really enjoyed that as a degree, and I also worked at the same time. So I was working at a help desk and doing some PC support while I was at university. When I graduated, I became a Unix administrator, and I really loved that. It was a really interesting job, and I really enjoyed that job, but I felt this itch to go to Europe. So I booked my flight the next day, actually, after I had made this decision. One of those,
yep.
I was stuck in traffic. I was like, I don't want to be in this traffic. I want to be in Europe. So I pretty much booked that flight and did a Kentucky tour, loved it so much, ran out of money and went, what can I do now? I went, okay, well, I'll apply for some help desk jobs. Got a help desk job, and it just basically funded my travel for my time over there, which was really great. And then they wanted to move the help desk to Ireland, and I didn't want to move to Ireland because I went, there's no airport, I'm not going to be able to travel. What else have you got for me in London? And they said, well, we could put you on this special program that we've just started, where we've taken smart engineers from across the world and we put them into this high intense training program, and you can apply for that if you want to. So I go and apply for it. They say to me, okay, well, why haven't you got a master's? Why haven't you got a PhD? You're not an engineer, but yeah, let's give you a chance. So they put me on this program, flew me to Houston. We learned everything to do with networking, project management, cybersecurity, which was called information security on the day, Microsoft as well. So we had to learn all about Microsoft and Unix. And because it was an oil and gas company, defensive driving, just to throw that in there too. So this 6 weeks was the hardest 6 weeks of my life because we had to come out with all the certifications, so the CCNA, the MCSC, and the SANS course. We had to study that.
And working in confined spaces too.
So everyone said, how was Houston? And I went, well, I was just locked in a room pretty much just studying a lot.
Definitely working in confined spaces. So.
Definitely starting us early in that. And then they said, okay, well, at the end of that, what would you like to do? Would you like to be working in networking or security? And I went, I didn't really enjoy networking. So whatever this other thing is, security, I'll take that. So that's how I got into security. Sorry, that was the long story. I don't know if you want me to tell it as a short story.
No, it's all good. I love when people are passionate about their backgrounds and stories, you know? So, I mean, it's funny to me because when I went to university, I had a pretty similar one. I ended up with a grad program and I ended up just falling into security, and then the whole security team left and they told me to kind of pick it up and learn security, and I did. So, and my uni only had one security course too. It was a data security, and you go into it and you're like, ah, yes, this is Chinese remainder theorem and extended Euclidean algorithms. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what math is. I'm a programmer. I'm sorry. So I didn't do so well in that one, but I loved it. I had a lot of fun with the cryptographic like algorithms and breaking stuff. And also I'm quite amused about the top deck Kentucky thing, because one time when I was working at Westpac, a mate of mine, James, was sitting there reading a top deck book, and I've known James for like 1 week because he's played Monopoly Deal with me once at lunch. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to go to Europe. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm coming. He looked at me, he's like a stunned mullet, and then he said, like, okay. And then we had the greatest like 3 week of like forever, and everyone just laughed that he was my holiday boyfriend at that point, because we just kept doing trips overseas together. So I fully, like, you know, we're kind of twin parakeets in a way, right?
Yeah, so. Love it. That's so good. Okay, we definitely need to chat after this to compare stories.
Yes, yes.
I want to ask you 100 questions now.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll do that later on. So we'll flip the script, then you can ask me. So
okay,
let's move into the area that you're super good at, which is diversity in cybersecurity. So why is this a particular interest area for you, firstly?
Yeah, so with that whole story, what I just talked about my background. So I started working as a consultant around Europe. So I worked in London for 7 years, worked in, you know, Paris for 7 years. I got to work on amazing projects with amazing teams. It was really, really diverse in terms of all the different things I got to work on. And I was really lucky, I think, with a lot of those projects that I got to work on. When I came back to Australia, I walked into my first Australia event in the industry, and I was just hit with a sea of men. I was like, whoa, okay. And I don't know if you know what that feeling's like, but you just walk in and go, oh, I don't belong here. I feel really intimidated by this. And it was interesting when I was, you know, some of the things that I was thinking about in preparation for this podcast, I was trying to think back what it was like in Europe. And I guess I never really thought about it so much. Like, I never really felt like I was different, even though I was the only female in a lot of my teams, now that in reflection. But it wasn't until that moment when I came back to my home country and went, really? Here? What's going on here? This is such an awesome area to work in. You can do it around the world. It's so diverse in terms of the things that you can do. And it is such a great opportunity for women or different types of people to get involved in a up-and-coming industry. So that's where my passion came from. And I went, do you know what? I think it's just a matter of putting a bit of effort into it and trying to connect other women and try to understand what this problem was. And so that's where, I guess, the start of what is called the Australian Women's Security Network, AWSN, came from. And that's where my passion for trying to get more diverse talent into our industry started.
Yeah, I mean, the industry is pretty male, pale and stale as a whole. So we need to be looking at doing something about that alliteration, right? So and when did you start AWSN? How long ago was that?
So I started that in 2014 when I came back to Australia after my stint over in Europe.
Oh, yeah. 10 years. You must be celebrating. You're going to have like a big AWSN super 10-year event party thing soon?
Didn't even think of that, but yeah, we probably should actually. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, like go ahead. Like here's the precursor. It's like I was on Secure talking to Cole and he said, we're going to have a super party. So we are. Let's celebrate all the achievements that we've done.
Great idea. I love that. I will. And I'll mention that too.
So what have you been able to achieve with AWSN over the last 10 years? Because like you said, I remember, you know, even my early few roles in tech back then were all like basically just, I mean, I live in a mining town. Mining has a very similar problem with cybersecurity, with just universally men going FIFO work and like having trouble attracting women into it. And they started running out of professionals in the area. So they have started setting up houses for couples to live in and trying to get the couple, like the female in the relationship, to also participate in the mine as well as a way to get more talent in. So, but as you must have been able to achieve a lot over the last 10 years. What are some things you're proud about?
Yeah, so one of the things that I'm proud about is that we've really built a really great support network for a lot of diverse talent that are coming into our industry. So it really can help with that whole, not only the attraction, but also that retention and helping lots of different women and diverse talent kind of elevate themselves in terms of leadership positions and become leaders in this industry. So establishing the network through, you know, the events that we run in all of our different 8 chapters across Australia. And also, I guess the other thing I'm proud about is the programs that we're running in conjunction with the Australian Signals Directorate. So we're running a series of different technical programs, leadership programs, mentoring program. And we also recently just did our first piece of research on gender dimensions. And that is really, I've been really proud about that because it's really good to create a baseline of where we're at. So then we can kind of work out, you know, how we've progressed over time and benchmark and make sure that we progress, continue to progress over time as well. And I guess one of the things that's been good to see is that the rate of women entering our sector has increased over the last 3 years, which is a really good indicator that some of the work that we're doing, but also other industry groups that are really putting attention to this diversity element, is working and is on the right track.
I mean, I've got 2 daughters and I really want them to have careers in Not necessarily security, but to have doors open if they want to go work in the coal mines or whatever the future mines are, I guess, or in this area, or if they want to be engineers or they want to go be, you know, lollipop people, construction workers, areas that just aren't necessarily dominated purely, but that currently are purely dominated by men. I want them to have those pathways available to it. It's really hard for them if they can't see people in those roles as it is right now, because they're quite young. One of my daughters is 9 and she wants to be a programmer like daddy, right? And I'm okay with that. But I think that we've got to work really hard to do what we can to try to encourage, find ways to help people move into those senior leadership roles, because I see it quite commonly as people hit a ceiling and they're like, I don't know where to go from here. So what can businesses do to try to help, you know, have more women move into leadership positions and encourage them to take those roles?
Yeah, so there's a few things that they can do. So one of them is about that whole exposure like you just mentioned, like it's really important that we start at a really young age to be those role models for the younger generation, because you can't be what you can't see. And if they don't know that a career in cybersecurity or technology or these other male-dominated areas exists, then it's really, really difficult. And the same goes when it comes to leadership positions. If women don't see other women that are the leaders, or those leaders are there to help bring them up or to expose them to those what happens in the leadership side of things, then it can be really difficult and taking a chance. So one of my biggest mottos is about taking a chance. So we do a lot of work with career changes. So women that are moving from one area, they might have a long background in business or in accounting or, you know, marketing or something, and to encourage them to be able to transition into cybersecurity with obviously the right skills and things like that, take a chance on that. Same goes for when it comes to leadership. You know, if you see somebody that has potential, bring them along to some of your meetings or get them to do a report to the board or to speak to the board to get that exposure, get them to present at conferences and really encourage them to present at conferences, give them the opportunity to do more than what they're actually doing to show that potential, I think is really important. And I think that that's one thing that I was really fortunate in Europe, in some of the roles that I was in, that I got the opportunity to work in this program called the High Flyers Network. And what they allowed us to do was to work on a project with the executives to help with a strategy element, which was really great. I had a manager who was really fantastic in anything that I wanted to do. So, for example, I said, I would love to do a presentation in Washington. And he encouraged me to then do some presentation training. And anything that I wanted to kind of do, that he was really encouraging me to do that. So having the message, I guess, to a lot of organizations is become that champion for those women that you see that has a really great potential.
I also find that a lot of women self-select out of just lots of things. So they'll say, I'm not the kind of person because I have 8 out of 10, so I'm missing 2. Whereas a lot of men would say, oh, I've got 3. That's good enough. Let's give it a go. And doing what we can to try to, like, when we're recruiting, to help create job descriptions or to create roles or to use referrals and networks to bring people in. That's the kind of way. And I've had great success hiring people from non-cognate backgrounds. And even like the work I'm doing at the University of Newcastle right now to help restructure their Masters of Cyber. It was like purely very, very network heavy and just very driven around like technical brilliance. And now we've opened it up to allow people who are coming from different disciplines to come in and learn about cybersecurity and made it non-cognate. And that's, to me, one of the best ways we can do with attracting, you know, a more diverse workforce, right, is if you're only appealing to like young men who just finished their Bachelor of Computer Science and now want to go into cyber, then of course the industry is going to be populated by people who know how to run Kali Linux and can't communicate or write or have empathy for people.
Absolutely. Can't agree more.
So there's a lot of, you know, managers who are listening to the podcast. And I know you said that you need them to advocate and help for people and be a champion to support, you know, women to get opportunities. What kind of barriers do you think exist within organizations, or inertia is there that we need to like tackle systemically before we can actually start creating this space for people to thrive?
Yeah, so I think I always talk about the organization and the teams need to be ready or willing to make a conscious effort to change things. I am quite a believer in that it's hard to push that onto a team because otherwise that makes it even harder for the diverse individuals to really thrive in that environment, because if they're considered kind of like that diverse hire, then that can be really tricky. So, you know, hire on merit, but make a conscious effort to really find those people and to uplift and develop them, I think is an important element.
I think 0 to 1 is always the hardest one in my experience, because you know, if you don't see anyone in your team who is a girl or a woman or identifies as a woman, then like you're immediately going to be ostracized, right? And you have no one to speak to. So getting that first hire, and then after that it gets a bit easier because you can, you know, build your little networks and stuff. But how can businesses and teams work from 0 to 1? Because I know that's personally where I struggled in the past, and I'm sure that there'd be plenty of other people willing to hear from you about how they can do that.
So one of the things that I always recommend is that instead of hiring one, hire two.
Yeah, okay.
So if you have a team where it is predominantly one gender or one type of people, high two of the other thing that you're trying to increase in terms of diversity. So the reason why I'm saying that is because if you want, for example, if you have a really good team, but you want to hire in people that are neurodiverse, or you want people that are from different backgrounds or different cultural backgrounds, etc., the same applies. So that has been quite successful. We've had a couple of companies that have done that, that have hired not even two, they've hired three or four into a team, which has been really good. It just means that those individuals have somebody, someone else that they can, you know, turn to if they need to. I know sometimes a lot of organizations say that they struggle to find one, let alone two, but you know, there are, that talent is out there. It's just, you have to look for it.
The people that say that they can't find talent aren't looking. That's my view. There is a tremendous amount of talent out there. It's just that people have these glasses and like blinders on specifically what they're looking for. And if it's an OSCP, he's got a computer science degree, that's going to almost certainly be, the demographic is 90% men, right? It's just how it is. But if you have a more open mind, then maybe you can find some gems out there elsewhere.
Absolutely. And just to really, as you mentioned earlier, it's about that job description of, okay, what is the core of what you need to do in that particular job? And what are some of those attributes that you really want in that individual? Because you can always teach some of those technical skills and coach them through it and things like that. But some of that behavior, or like you mentioned before, the empathy and looking at things in a different way, the innovation or creative thinking or the analytical mindset, that stuff that you cannot teach, like it's an innate part of somebody. So really have a look at, okay, what are the types of things that we're doing in this particular role that is fundamental to it? So if there's a lot of, for example, writing or report writing, look for somebody that loves writing and can write really well, for example.
So we've already talked about your motivation of like wanting to come into the industry. Do you have any advice for like parents or just people who, you know, have young kids or like teenagers or just even nephews and cousins who are looking to get into technology or just into a male-dominated industry and just have no idea about how to go about breaking down that barrier? And how can they support their kids or their family members?
Yeah, so it's about interest, I think. So all the schools across Australia have access to several different platforms which can expose you to the different areas of technology. For example, the Grok Academy is one that comes to mind, where they have a lot of cybersecurity challenges, for example.
I know Grok.
Yeah.
I was on that. I had a really bad beard.
Oh, did you? I didn't recognize you.
Yeah, it's disgusting. It's like I can't even, I got this patchy hole here. I can't even do it. So, but I was on that back like a few years ago. Hopefully they've updated it. It's a super cringe. I used to wear a leather jacket everywhere and think I was cool.
So everyone that's listening, if you go into Grok, look for Cole.
No, don't do it, please. This is before I ran my podcast and started a business and decided to be bright pink and obnoxious. Now, yeah, back then I thought it was cool to wear like white pants and a brown leather top and tell people that I'm a elite hacker man, come do cyber nerd stuff.
Brilliant. Oh gosh, I'm going to have to look now.
Oh.
So that's one thing, I think.
Yeah, going back to the question.
Going back to the question, you know, experimenting with that, even, you know, with the kids and stuff would be a really great way of getting them exposed to it, getting them excited, because it's very much about challenges. And I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, that a lot of what cybersecurity is about analyzing and, you know, puzzles and things like that. And it's very different. So I think, and also I think they do videos, as we've seen, of different careers in cybersecurity with, you know, Cole talking about what his role was, I guess, in cybersecurity at that time.
Yeah, that was instead of being a, you know, weird founding feather and podcast host, I guess. Back then, I was doing AppSec at Westpac, and just telling people, learn a bit of software engineering and tell people to write better code. Yeah. I still do that nowadays, but with nicer language.
I was about to say the message has not changed. So, yeah.
No, it hasn't changed. Well, we'll move on to some rapid-fire questions for you now. What's one big cybersecurity misconception that you would like to debunk?
Yes, so the one that I would like to debunk is the fact that you have to be super technical, you need to be able to code, and you spend your life in the dungeon wearing a hoodie. It is not the case.
Yep. I hate it. I was a few months ago at Parliament House. I said that the cyber industry needs to kind of change because we are very good at patting ourselves on the back. The way that we evaluate ourselves is on our CVEs, our write-ups, our presentations at Black Hat events, but none of these matter in context of helping people solve problems, being an empathetic and kind person, speaking in plain language and being approachable and friendly. And like, I feel like those kind of things are really missing from the conversation when honestly that the game changes. And like, if we're always focused on being technically brilliant and have all of our pen testing certs and have our CCNAs and stuff, that's not necessarily going to help shift the needle, right?
Yes. And I think we need to remind people that the reason why a lot of people got into cybersecurity is that they want to help protect people as well. That's the objective of what we're trying to do, protect people, protect organizations, and help. And I think that it's important to remember where that is. And yes, technical knowledge is super important, but it isn't for every single aspect. You don't have to be an expert in all elements of cybersecurity because it's frankly impossible to be an expert in all domains. And that perception that that's what it is and you have to wear the hoodie and you have to be super technical, and I think that scares off a lot of people as well.
I hate the hoodies so much. I just like, I wear like bright pink business shirts and white pants, so I look like I belong on a golf course, not on a, like, in a dark room, you know? So, I mean, I think it works for me. It's fun. Mm. It's kind, and people, you know, just look at you as a normal professional. And to be totally frank, what we're doing is providing professional services and advice about a discipline people don't understand.
Yeah.
Are we different to lawyers and doctors? Not that much. All right, that was that one. Here's another one. So what do you think will, like, now we're moving into 2024. What do you think the big theme for cyber this year is going to be?
The big theme for 2024. So I think it's going to be AI and quantum. Like, that is just a big thing in terms of not only a threat, but it's also an opportunity. So as security software and professionals use it, I think it's a really great opportunity. It is also a threat because the hackers and the cyber criminals are using those tools just as quickly as we are as well. So I think that that's going to be a huge thing this year.
Yep. And what do you hope to see change over the next couple of years with your work for the AWSN? What are you hoping to achieve for the next 10 years? Let's go with that.
Next 10 years, I hope that when it comes to diversity or this industry, no matter who you are, what you look like, what your background is, if you're the right person for the job, you will be considered and you will be valued and you will be able to contribute to this industry that is ever-changing and has so many opportunities.
And so let's break those barriers.
Break those barriers, yes.
Yeah, no wall building. We're going to break all the walls. There's no firewalls anymore.
Yes, exactly.
That's it. Oh, Jackie, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to say before we wrap up?
No, that's it. Thank you so much for having me. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Secured. If you got any feedback at all, feel free to hit us up and let us know. If you'd like to learn more about how Galah Cyber can help keep your business secured, go to galahcyber.com.au. If you're new to the show or a seasoned veteran, I want to hear from you. I'm always looking to do better as a podcast host and as a person. So tell me about what I can do better. Tell me about the types of people you want on my podcast. Tell me about if the format's working for you or styles need to be switched up. Do I need to interview differently? So on and so forth. I appreciate you sticking with me for almost 30 episodes at this stage. And I hope I can keep learning and you can keep learning and being entertained for many more episodes to come. So please shoot me feedback. I want the good, the bad, and the ugly to pod@galahcyber.com.au. And if you don't like email, hit me up on LinkedIn.